97.9 FM, WCHL, and the UNC College of Journalism and Mass Communication presents Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. Sports Focus is dedicated to in-depth examinations of issues of overarching importance in the sports world. Each week, we'll discuss problems and look for solutions to problems in professional, collegiate, and amateur sports. From Carroll Hall on the UNC campus, here's your host, journalism professor Charlie Tuggle.
Welcome to Sports Focus. Our topic today, the one-and-done phenomenon in college basketball. Our guest, Lynn Elmore, a basketball analyst and attorney who was an All-American at Maryland and played professionally for 10 years. He's also a member of the Knight Commission. And Chris Ekstrand, a former sports writer and current scout for the NBA. Ever since the NBA enacted an age restriction on players eligible to be drafted in 2005, some players who probably had the talent to go directly from high school to the NBA now must attend college for 1 year. Lynn, let's start with you. What does this one-and-done phenomenon say about the whole concept of student-athlete?
Well, I think, unfortunately, it's an opportunity for people to just focus solely on preparing themselves for professional sports instead of going to an institution and developing, as an institution should, developing leadership skills and some of the other things that are necessary in life. And you know, I don't begrudge the prodigies who are able to go for 1 year and leave, but it's not those guys that I worry about. It's the guys who think they're the prodigies, haven't focused on any type of preparation for life, have this false sense of, you know, the dream, if you will, and then ultimately it doesn't occur for them, and, you know, they've lost opportunities to prepare themselves.
And Chris, you know, Lynn talked about the prodigies. You know, when a Kobe Bryant comes along, that he is going to excel in the NBA, but there are so many others who go out after a year or two or three who really aren't ready for the league. How often do you see that?
I think it's a mixed bag. I think that one thing that you would see is the rules would be a lot different if there had never been a Kevin Garnett or a Kobe Bryant who came directly from high school and were extremely successful. And by the same token, there have been people who have come into the draft prematurely and they've failed. So I think it's been a mix. Again, Kevin Garnett, when he came out in 1995 directly from high school, he was the first player to come directly from high school into the NBA in 20 years. So that was a huge test case. And then you had Kobe Bryant the very next season in 1996. Now, both of those guys are still playing, and it's almost 20 years later. So clearly, those guys were extremely successful. The NBA and the NBA Players Association in 2005 changed the collective bargaining agreement to say that players had to be 1 year past their high school graduation. Now, we've had a player like Brandon Jennings go and play in Italy. Jeremy Tyler went and played in Israel, and those guys are in the league today. So they have, not everyone has played 1 year of college basketball and then left, but most still do.
And Lynn, when they do that, is it that more or less saying, we know you aren't that interested in being a student, we know that you're here just because you have to be here?
Well, for the most part. But let me backtrack and say that even today at 18, you can still play professional basketball, and it doesn't have to be overseas. You can go into the NBA Developmental League. But because of the way our culture views that, all of a sudden, you know, that's not cool enough for a lot of these kids. And that's part of the problem. I also have believed for the longest time that, you know, it really is a situation where the NBA came across a terrific idea. When you could come straight out of high school into the NBA, there were some successful guys like the Garnetts and like the Kobe Bryants, but there are a lot of guys who were paid an awful lot of money and never really panned out to be players. And so now with this agreement that you can come, you have to go 1 year, it gives college the duty to essentially market these guys to be the farm team for the NBA. And then, you know, after a year, the league has a better handle on how these guys are playing, and they can take the chance on them. And really, that's what it's come down to. At one time, college was the biggest competitor to the NBA, and now the NBA has used college as a farm system, as a petri dish, if you will, And essentially now they've got the ability to view these guys and have a chance to scout them better. Now, again, it really is a statement that I'm not really interested in school for most of these guys. And some of them ultimately will, during the course of their careers, if they make it in the NBA, will continue and go back to school because they recognize the importance of it. But as I said, there are so many guys with their focus on playing the sport that they lose sight of the many opportunities for development, in particularly in the event that they're not successful for development to go out into the real world. And we've seen too many of those stories. Even one is too many.
And, Chris, whose fault is it? I think there's a lot of blame to go around, but is it the NBA? Is it the universities? Is it society in general that coddles, hugely talented athletes and lets them slide from the time they're in junior high school?
Well, I'd like to bring up one other issue, and Len did a great job talking about, the playing field and how it looks these days. I will say this. When there's a prodigy in women's tennis and she's playing at Wimbledon at 16, that doesn't seem to bother anybody. And when somebody has a golf club in their hand and they're 16 and they're playing against the pros, if they're good enough, that doesn't seem to bother anyone either. The reason it bothers people in this country that guys come right out of high school and play in the NBA is because the system that we've developed is that universities sponsor collegiate sports. In Europe, you make a decision when you're 16 years old whether you're going to be a professional athlete or you're going to go to the university, and there the twain shall meet. A guy like Ricky Rubio, who's a point guard in the NBA now for Minnesota, was playing at the top level in Spain when he was 15 years old, playing against men, playing against guys who'd played in the NBA. And, nobody had a problem with that. That's the system that Europe has. The system that we have is this incredible superstructure called college basketball. And so that's what people have grown used to over the years. But that doesn't have to be. That's just the system that we have.
And we'll pick up on that thought right after this.
You're listening to Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. And now, back to the show on 97.9 FM, WCHL.
Welcome back to Sports Focus. We're talking about the one-and-done phenomenon in college basketball with Len Elmore and Chris Ekstrand. Len, before the break, Chris brought up the concept of it's a different system. The U.S. system is different than it is anywhere else in the world as far as collegiate athletics. How much is it the system that's the problem?
Well, let me say this. First of all, the system is a problem because it is open to exploitation. It's open to academic fraud once kids come into school, particularly those who aren't prepared, and they try to keep them eligible. But it goes back further than that. The difference between what happens in Europe and with Ricky Rubio here in the United States is the NBA is 80% African-American, approximately. And when you have situations where in the big cities, particularly, graduation rates are underwater. They're less than 50%. And now you have young men who recognize that all we have to do is just get to a level of eligibility to get into college, and I talked about, again, the academic fraud and some of the exploitation, then we don't have to do anything else. And the burden of failure falls primarily on kids of color and on disadvantaged kids, regardless of color. And that's where the problem is, where kids don't focus on achieving to the best of their ability and playing basketball. The focus is just on playing basketball. Look, I came up in the same kind of system, but at a time where when we came up, the problem, the achievement gap, if you will, in education wasn't nearly as great. That I could perform, I could do well in college, and I could be a professional athlete. Those days are long gone, and a lot of it has to do with the education system. And the ones who don't make it, the prodigies make it, the ones who don't make it are at serious risk going forward for the rest of their lives. And we've heard horror story after horror story of these kids. And that is the difference. The burden of failure is falling on, in many ways on disadvantaged kids.
Chris, I know you won't be able to mention any names, and I'm not asking you to, but surely you have seen examples of what Lynn is talking about, a kid who comes out who just isn't ready and doesn't make it. And then what does he have?
I didn't hear the very end of your question, but I think the thing is you have players who have been incredibly successful, like Kevin Garnett and Kobe Bryant. You have some players who have been moderately successful, and I'll give you an example. In 2001, four of the first eight picks in that draft were directly from high school. Now, those players were Kwame Brown, who was the number one pick, Eddie Curry, Tyson Chandler, and Sagana Jopp. Now, these players were not the incredible successes that Kevin Garnett and Kobe Bryant were, but at the same time, Kwame Brown, you know, still in the league. You have Jopp was in the league until last year. Eddie Curry basically ate his way out of the league. It wasn't a talent issue. And Tyson Chandler, of course, has a contract that pays him over $10 million a year playing for the Knicks. So there have been, when you talk about abject failure and then you talk about incredible success, those are not the only two options. I mean, a guy like Kwame Brown certainly hasn't been as successful as most number one overall picks, but he wasn't a failure either. I mean, if you asked him, 12, 13 years later, hey, he's been in the NBA all that time cashing those big checks, whether he's playing all that well or just a backup. So, I mean, it's been successful for him. The truth is that what Len mentioned about guys who have been, abject failures, there have been some of those, but there hasn't been that huge preponderance of them. The guys who
I totally disagree. You don't even know the names of those guys.
There have been some of those, but not that many.
You don't even know the names of those guys, the kids who think they are who they are. We've established a culture now where, you'll never know the names of these kids who think that they're going to be NBA players and ultimately fail. Certainly the Lenny Cooks of the world and people like that draw headlines, but there are so many kids. You can ask just about any educator in any big city and even in small towns, what has happened to some of these guys? Is the schoolyard legends that think that they're going to the NBA and ultimately don't. There are so many of kids that ultimately believe that they're going to make it. They forsake the opportunities that they have in school. They forsake the opportunities that they have when they get to college and ultimately, fall by the wayside. So, when you talk about the guys who made it moderately successful, and the ones who are supremely successful, I lump them all in the same boat. They are making far more money than the average person in the United States. So that to me, from a financial standpoint, is success. I don't care how long you've been in the NBA. I don't care to what degree of stardom you achieve. Again, the greater good, in my mind, is to take a look at all of those who think that that's where they're supposed to be, because, there's something out there, a symbol out there for them to point to. And I think that's the wrong symbol, and the arrow, as far as direction is pointing in the wrong direction.
Chris, I'm going to bring up a kind of an off-the-wall example from one of the singing competitions that I was watching last night, and a guy who was terrible thought that he was better than the three judges put together. So where as a society do we fail that we allow kids to put all their eggs in one basket and to think that they are the next potential superstar when they're not?
Well, I think there is a culture of coddling that goes on at the lower levels. And, the NBA gets the finger pointed at it a lot. And I think David Stern made it very plain more than once. First of all, in 2005, when the NBA and the Players Association agreed that they were going to go to this so-called one-and-done rule, David Stern had been advocating for a long time, for 2 years. Now, that wouldn't change everything, and it wouldn't speak to some of the issues that Len has brought up, but it would have been better. This is what they came out with. It was a compromise. The Players Association didn't want to go for the 2 years. But in terms of the society, certainly, when you see budget cuts for schools like we have here in the state of North Carolina, that isn't good. Education is the silver bullet that can lift people out of poverty, that can lift people out of lower socioeconomic groups. But that's not the fault of the NBA or the NCAA. Yes, they're the symbols for success, and they're, sort of one in a million stories that people do make it and become Kobe Bryant. But I will say this, we have to change as a society what we prize. And that's been that way for a long time. I mean, when I was a little kid, I remember Tracy Austin on the cover of Sports Illustrated with pigtails and braces, and she was 14. And again, I went back to women's tennis twice now, but that, you know, again, that was thought to be cute, wonderful. And, you know, when we see ice dancing in the Olympics, you have girls who are 16 years old, and, you know, they've been away from their families in some academy practicing for 5 years. That doesn't seem to bother anyone. But I think in the African-American community, these issues of poverty and academic opportunity are as problematic today as they've ever been. And, you know, again, when you see state legislatures saying, this is where we need to cut, let's cut education, that's obviously absolutely the wrong thing to do.
And we'll be back right after this.
You're listening to Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. And now back to the show on 97.9 FM WCHL.
Welcome back to Sports Focus with our guests, Lynn Elmore and Chris Ekstrand. Lynn, what about this idea that as a society we're to blame for any of these issues that we're bringing up today?
There's no question about it that instant gratification and some of the other buzzwords that go to placing material attainment and some of the other stuff way ahead of preparation for leadership, certainly those are the things that are reinforced every day for these young kids. Now, when we talk about education in the African-American community, that wasn't always the case. As I said, when I grew up in the 60s and in the 70s, certainly there were some issues, but nevertheless, people didn't always dream about being a professional athlete. I certainly didn't. I wanted to be a lawyer. And I think a lot of the kids in my neighborhood, the same thing, professional athletics wasn't always the case as far as your ultimate dream. But reality sets in and you're able to accomplish. It's only when the money started to become as big as it is, when the exposure became as big as it is, and again, the material wealth was placed above anything else, is when all of a sudden this became a dream, a way out of these issues, and combined with all the other sociological problems that we've had in the United States. But in the end, let me say this about the NBA. They always talked about they'd probably be better served with a more mature, better educated player. And when David Stern focused on the 2 years, that may be the case. But he also said they're not a social. They're not going to solve social problems. But here's the deal: the smoking gun, in my point, was a couple years ago in a collective bargaining agreement. The NBA had the players' backs against the wall. They could have easily imposed 2 years, even 3 years, and the NBA players would not have been able to fight that. It didn't even come up in the meetings because this system has worked very well for the NBA, and unfortunately, we're going to continue to have the issues that we have until we make the change, not only NBA, not only NCAA, but again, from a societal standpoint, from a parental standpoint, and anybody else who has the care and the welfare of these young people in mind.
Chris, you mentioned that, you know, we can't really blame the NBA, we can't really blame the NCAA, but I see those two as markedly different. The NBA is an entertainment industry. It's out to make money. The NCAA is part of an educational mission. And to me, that makes a huge difference. Do you see it that way?
Obviously, they're different, yes. I will say that, you know, we would probably have to do 10 shows on the position that the NCAA has placed itself in with decisions that they've made over the years. And the one thing I will say is Len alluded to it. It was different in the 60s and the 70s, and that has changed. But I think if you talk to any college president, there's been a tidal wave that has enveloped these universities, and it is not the same world. There's an arms race in collegiate sports to be better than the next guy. And if College A builds a huge facility, that's going to be a recruiting tool, then University B decides they have to do the same thing. So, yeah, I mean, again, I don't want to say it's all the NBA's fault, it's all the NCAA's fault. You know, there's enough blame to go around. Things have gone down the wrong track for quite a while now, and it starts with society, and there's also plenty of blame to go around to other parties to this.
And that does it for this edition of Sports Focus. Thanks to our guests, Lynn Elmore and Chris Extrand. Thanks also to producer Justin Blankenship and to engineer Gary Kirk. Thanks to you, as always, for listening. Cheers.
Thanks to Richard Southall, Mark Nagel, and Deborah Southall of the College Sport Research Institute at the University of South Carolina for their research and guidance and for access to CSRI's international network of sources. Sports Focus is a production of UNC's College of Journalism and Mass Communication.